We're back for the fourth and final preview pod for the 2023-24 La Liga season. We generally start with news, and it just happens to tie in. The big news this week just happens to tie into the first of our last five teams. Real Madrid have lost their starting goalkeeper, arguably the best goalkeeper in the world, to an ACL tear during training yesterday, which is Thursday. A huge blow for them, and it makes La Liga's title race even more interesting. Presuming it's going to be a three-horse race, this pulls Real Madrid a little bit closer to Barcelona and Atletico Madrid.
Yep. Yeah. Losing Courtois at this stage, there's really no answer to it, or at least no good answer. They're not going to commit the money it would take to buy a goalkeeper who is close to his level, and that means they're going to have to look for a low-cost option. It could be somebody like David Soria from Getafe, somebody close who knows the league, or David De Gea. I'm sure he's going to get a mention. Maybe we'll mention him shortly, actually. There's there's no dressing this one up. It's a real killer for Ancelotti.
Yeah, so we have Real Madrid, Opta, that is, have Real Madrid as the favourites, 47.7% chance of them winning the league. Barcelona second, 25.9% chance. And Atletico Madrid, 19.3% chance of winning the league. Surprising 19.3% chance, I thought, because I thought Atletico had a chance, but that's only 6 percentage points behind Barcelona, who basically walked the league last season. We were very high on Atletico's second half to last season, and Barcelona won the league for various reasons, but one of the main reasons was Marc-Andre Ter Stegen's overperformance in goals. So we've pulled up some goals prevented data here, and Marc-Andre Ter Stegen had three seasons where he conceded more goals than expected, and last season he returned to form with 9.2 goals, expected goals on target prevented. Basically, he prevented 9.2 goals, and that turned into a title winning season for Barcelona. Now, Thibaut Courtois in the last 5 years has not conceded more goals than he would have been expected to. He's been in the positive in each of those. His build up play, we'll talk about that now in just a second. But in terms of pure shot stopping, it doesn't really get a whole lot better than Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, for consistency every season, he's pretty much as good as it gets. Like you said, Ter Stegen wildly overperformed last season after three kind of middling seasons. But Courtois is just the guy who every season his numbers are either solid or at times exceptional. Yeah, there's to Real Madrid fans' credit, there are a lot of them that will openly admit that Courtois bails them out a lot, and that's the reality. I think last season they were pretty poor defense in terms of a team who were pushing for the title, but it didn't feel like Courtois had a bad season really. Maybe at worst you could call it an average season by his standards, but yeah, to now lose the security that he gives you behind a defence and a team who are looking for defensive balance is just terrible, really. There's really no positive spin on it whatsoever. This is just awful news for Real Madrid.
I'll give you a positive spin on this, and it's not much of a positive spin, so I apologise to Real Madrid fans listening, but Courtois, you're only replacing the shot stopping. You can find a player who can do what he did in build up. Now, I know you're just replacing the shot stopping. That's really difficult. But I do think it's easier to find someone who can just I'm selling Courtois short here, and I know that, and I don't want to do that. But I'm just saying, we'll only really see the effect of the build up in the Champions League. So, for example, if you signed David De Gea, rooted to his line, that was the big problem with him at Manchester United in the last couple of seasons. He couldn't evolve into what a modern Premier League goalkeeper needed to be. if he was to sign with Real Madrid, they'd probably get away with that a little bit more in La Liga. Now, the Champions League, an entirely different story, and Real Madrid are going to have to figure something out there. But if you sign a De Gea or a Bono or a David Soria, the shot stopping is average or slightly maybe above average. Now, the negative spin on it, or one of the negative things that Real Madrid have to deal with, is they've already changed systems. They're changing systems this season, and we know that. They're playing a kind of a narrow diamond, meaning that on the flanks they're going to be a little bit more exposed, and they have looked defensively fragile at times during the preseason. This just exasperates that, because no matter who you have in goals now, they're not going to have, the defenders aren't going to have the same kind of confidence they did in Courtois. They're going to have to sit a little bit deeper. The fullbacks aren't going to be able to push forward as much, and they're going to have a problem with width to begin with. So it has a massive knock-on effect all over the field for Real Madrid. But the one thing is, if they can find a shot stopper, then at least it's not like you're trying to replace an Ederson who is so important to your build-up. It's like losing one of your premium playmakers. You know what I mean? So it's a tough one, and I don't know how Real Madrid are going to solve this. Ancelotti says the confidence in Lunin is total. So I don't know if he's just saying that just to give Lunin a boost, but I'm not convinced. And speaking about their change of system, they've obviously signed Jude Bellingham. Jamie has written about that. They play Athletic Bilbao on Saturday, one of the highest pressing teams in. And I spoke about getting away with not having a ball-playing goalkeeper in La Liga. But against Athletic Bilbao, it's one of the toughest assignments they're going to have all season. And Ernesto Valverde is going to see, okay, this is a chance now for us to properly get after these guys. Test Lunin. Test that back lane, see what they're made of. And it's going to be a really tricky one for them. So, yeah, you've written about Jude Bellingham and their change of system, how they're building around him. Do you see the loss of Courtois affecting that in a massive way?
I think you're right to point towards, along with the shot stopping and the actual tangible effect he has on a match, just the knock for confidence for everybody, really. Just to know that they've lost such a huge figure in net. I mean, you probably won't see this over there, but Gary Neville, every time he's on Monday Night Football or Sky over here, he always talks about having a goalkeeper who has some sort of presence, because it gives confidence to everybody ahead of him, and it gives them the feeling of conviction in things that they're doing. So when that's totally lost, and on Saturday it's going to be Lunin in net, away to Athletic at San Mamés opening day. That is, like I said, that's a big test for him and for the team to see how they respond. Yeah, there's really not many places you could start off in more difficult circumstances than away to Bilbao, San Mamés, one of the most aggressive out position teams in the league. And if they're going to beat Real Madrid, it's going to have to be a key aspect in terms of turning the ball over and then testing Lunin, like you said. But yeah, on to Bellingham. I was doing a preview for this match for somebody else, and just knowing how physical a game it's going to be, the fact that they're going to have this diamond with Bellingham, Camavinga, Valverde, Tchouaméni possibly, although they're probably not going to be quite as crisp on the ball, like in physical terms, this is a Real Madrid team who you can say in full confidence are going to go to San Mamés and stand up physically and be up for the battle. They're probably one of the few teams that can sort of give Athletic the runaround, just in terms of pure power and dynamism. So yeah, this is going to be an interesting first test of the diamond and this new young midfield.
Athletic Bilbao underachieved massively based off their expected goals last season, so I'd be expecting them to come out And I'm sure they know that. I'm sure they feel like we played better than what where we ended up in the table. It was a very disappointing season for them. And I'm sure that they're going to be coming out now ready to go this season. And they'll feel like the games don't get much bigger than Real Madrid coming to town either. So it's a huge game for them. And a huge opportunity now to, like you said, put a bit of pressure on that back line, test out, see what their high press can figure out, can what kind of chances they can create from their high press. So just in terms of transfers in, Jude Bellingham, Arda Güler, Fran García, Joselu, and Brahim Diaz, who returned from loan. And then you've got transfers out, Antonio Blanco, Karim Benzema, Marco Asensio, Mariano, and Vallejo has gone on loan. So they've lost not just Benzema, but then they've lost Courtois, Asensio. We spoke about Bellingham there, and one of the things that I've been wondering in the season and I've read about and I've seen myself from Vinicius on the field is that he's being forced to drift inside a little bit more. Ancelotti was speaking today during a press conference saying basically that Real Madrid weren't going to play with a nine this season. Vinicius loves going out on the wing, taking on players one-on-one, and he's being forced to adapt. And I'm just wondering, how much does he feel like, why you're building around Bellingham here, or it definitely feels like you're building around Bellingham. Sorry, I'll rephrase that. It looks like you're building around Bellingham. Now, in reality, they're building for the loss of Benzema. They're trying to restructure an attack after losing Benzema, and Bellingham just happens to be best in a number 10, and they feel like Vinicius can play as that central player. But it looks like to me that he isn't entirely comfortable in a central position. And I'm wondering just how long that's going to take. Are we going to see struggles there? Is he going to get frustrated? Is he going to want to go out to the wing and just drift outside and Real Madrid find themselves with no central player? And, or maybe that might be part of the plan. A lot of speculation here. We haven't seen Real Madrid play in an actual game yet. We've seen a lot of them in preseason. But do you think that that's going to be an issue? And do you think Vinicius has reason to complain or to feel a little bit, why aren't they building around me here, given the fact that he was so electric last season? And he's probably going to suffer a slump now in his touches, in his impact.
Yeah, well, we'll see in time whether Ancelotti's his vision is going to be proven true, because when you hear him speak about Vinicius, he talks about the fact that if he's playing central, he's going to be in position to score more goals. He's going to be more decisive. He can help us cover for the loss of Benzema. But when you've watched it in pre-season, it's, even if he had scored a couple more goals, maybe it didn't, you didn't have the feeling that you're watching a player who was totally comfortable, like in his natural habitat. He wasn't getting the same touches. You know, for these star players, Vinicius is not like the PSG front three that we saw recently. But for those guys, having their zones on the pitch to know where they can go and get their touches in and have safe zones to receive the ball, if Vinicius is playing inside, he's going to lose a bit of that. So it's definitely it's an open topic as to how this is actually going to work out. And if Fran García embeds himself as the starting left back, then he's different to Mendy, to Camavinga. He's very much more of a wing back than a full back. So again, there is reason to play Vinicius inside if Fran García is the flying wing back that you want to open up the pitch for. But again, it comes back to Vinicius, and he's the guy that you've got to place a priority on. But yeah, I think the diamond system as well, just to add, it's also Ancelotti responding to the fact that he's got an incredible number of midfielders that he's got to keep happy and he's got to find roles for. If they didn't play the diamond midfield, then there's a number of really quality players who are going to miss out every week. And a lot of them are young too as well. So it's a tricky balance between managing the development of these young players, the number of midfielders, and covering Benzema's loss at the same time.
The one player who I think is definitely going to benefit from this is Rodrigo, because he, it might sound strange to say he's due for a breakout season, but I think he genuinely could have a 20 plus goal season here. And I know that's probably sounds like I'm exaggerating, but his underlying numbers were incredible last season with Benzema and the team. And he, I think, is more suited to being inside, to being more central, and has probably closer control in and around the box. And I think that he could be ready for a huge season. We'll move on then to Real Sociedad, who play Girona on Saturday night, which is going to be another cracker of a game, because we're pretty big on Girona around here. And Real Sociedad obviously qualified for the Champions League for the first time in a decade last season. They'll be trying to do that again, and then maybe improve on that, because while they haven't really signed that many players, you add Umar Sadiq into the mix. He tore his ACL last season after moving for Almeria, so he's basically like a new signing. Andre Silva to add competition there and to provide a little bit of variety in the attack line. And Hamari Traore, a right back who we love in preseason, and we think he's been playing really well. We'll talk about him in a second. And it's an area, months ago when we started the pod, we spoke about areas the Real Sociedad had to improve. One of them was fullback. They've gone out and got Traore, and he looks like he's just an express train when he moves inside and opens up the whole right-hand side for Kubo. They're going to have to adjust now for losing David Silva to retirement after an ACL tear, and their attack is going to have to evolve into something fresh, something new. You're a big fan of Real Sociedad in general. Are you excited for them this season?
Yeah, very much. It's not been a summer where they've really sort of lent on the fact that they're a Champions League level team now, where they've gone to the market and said, you know, come join us, we're a Champions League level team now. It's maintaining a solid base. If they hadn't lost David Silva, then there's not too many players that they've lost where you think that's really going to come back to bite. And yeah, I just think Real Sociedad, they're right up there in terms of setting the standards for being competitive week by week. You've seen today, right back, Gorosabal has gone to Alaves. And I think he's a good sort of barometer for where they're at, because he's not a bad player, very serviceable at La Liga level, but they're setting new standards now. And if you're not really on the level and really pushing and advancing, then I think the door kind of closes for you a little bit now under Alguacil, because, you know, they're just a really competitive team and they want to keep pushing. So guys who are not pulling their weight maybe quite as much as they expect to, are just going to have the doors closed on them.
I think I know who you might be talking about in that one. We'll talk about him in a second.
Yeah. But if, you know, we talked a lot about Barcelona's defense last season, as in being historically good. If you check the expected goals numbers, Real Sociedad were right there with Barcelona last season. So maybe if they'd have had Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, they could have won La Liga as well. Joking.
Possibly, yeah. if you had Ter Stegen, they might have come closer than they did. But they do have that defensive solidity there, and that will make them competitive against pretty much most teams. And they are linked now with Donny van de Beek, Arsen Zakarian of Dynamo Moscow. Can't say I've seen him at all, so I won't comment, but he's apparently close to coming in, or they're in negotiations about that. So just a quick word on Traore. He plays on the right, and what he's been doing in preseason is, and we've seen the box midfield is all the rage. All the cool kids are playing it now. And so Traore and Zarate, we presume it's going to be, or we don't presume, it's going to be Zubimendi beside him in the box at in certain phases of play when they push up a little bit. Traore drifts inside, and then Mikel Merino and Bryce Mendes at the other players in that box midfield. And then Traore just takes off, drives forward. The whole right wing then is left for Kubo. He has options then to maybe play Traore through, drift inside, cut inside, and play Marino, Bryce Mendez. Umar Sadiq's movement is really good. And I think it gives them another dimension altogether, and it might impact their defensive solidity a little bit, but these are just the trade-offs you have to accept. So on to the point about you're saying about their squad, it's something that you had picked up on last season, and every time you watch him now, you're gathering more evidence, and you're starting to get genuinely concerned now about Mikel Oyarzabal's level after coming back from the ACL tear. And you said to me the other day that it's such a competitive squad now that he used to be the star pretty much regardless. Now there's so much competition for places. There's so many creative players. Kubo, Mikel Merino's come on a lot. Bryce Mendez is a different kind of player and a really good, he's 24 or 5 now, so not really a prospect anymore, but an excellent player who can carry a lot of the creative burden. Mikel Oyarzabal needs to pull up his socks here, or he might find himself on the outside looking in at Real Sociedad pretty soon.
Yeah, I don't take any joy in like pulling him up on his performances or question if he's at the level now. But you know, we have given him quite a bit of time now after his injury. He came back in December, it was, and since then, I think we said it before, his status at the club and the fact he's an icon in the team, he's the captain, it's not really added up to his performances for quite a while now. And, you know, it's there's no part of you that wants to force like an icon out of the team or really question him in any way, but it just doesn't feel like he's affecting games a great deal. And he was never a great footballer in physical terms, and you know, he's not going to improve athletically as he gets older. So you just worry about him a little bit, because if Real Sociedad are going to get where they want to go and really become a top four embedded team in Spain, then this is a team with ultra competition across a number of different positions. And you just wonder what would it actually take for Alguacil to actually consider that Oyarzabal might not be the guy that they want him to be in the perfect world.
And as you said, there's a lot of pressure both from the squad currently, some of the players coming in like Donny van de Beek, disappointment of Manchester United, but will definitely add to that attacking midfield and add even more competition. And then of course you've got the youngsters at Real Sociedad there. They've got a really good academy, and we're just wondering if you see any of those youngsters playing any significant minutes. Is there anyone we should be looking out for coming up through the ranks at Real Sociedad?
Yeah, it's an unbelievable conveyor belt of talent, and I don't think there's very few teams that give the amount of care to those players as well in terms of looking after their development. So I think as long as Alguacil's there and the current regime is there, the players just won't stop arriving. And this summer, the two I've liked the most, or the two that I think are probably in best position to really step up, are Robert Navarro, obviously after David Silva's retirement. They gave Navarro a new contract recently, and the fact that he'd not played a great deal and yet they've still given him the contract makes me think that he's in a position to step up. And I've liked what I've seen in pre-season. He's very, very good technically. He's just had to add those other parts to his game and to really try and fit in this team, especially when it comes to off-ball duties. And the other one was Urco González de Zarate, to give him his full name, who has looked pretty good as a defensive midfielder. And they don't really have a like-for-like replacement for Zubimendi in terms of a senior player. So yeah, there's a spot there open for him, and he's a big physical lad, former centre back as well. He's played quite a lot of centre back, especially in Segunda. So I think he looks a solid option to back up Zubimendi.
And they might have to replace him before too long. Obviously Barcelona keep coming knocking for him, and fair play to Zubimendi. He just knocked him on their heels. He was like, I'm not leaving. That's it. Yeah. There was no drama. I loved it. And Yeah, so that's great. So if Zarate does play significant minutes, then maybe they'll feel a little bit more comfortable if Zubimendi ends up getting poached. But he's there this season anyway, and yeah, an excellent central defensive midfielder. So moving on from Real Sociedad, who finished fourth last season, they play Girona on Saturday, and they'll be looking to go back to the Champions League and possibly break into the top three, although that's probably a little bit of a reach so far. We'll cool the jets on that one. And we're moving on now to Sevilla, who play Valencia in just a few short hours, Jamie. So it's a bit of a weird game in many ways, because Sevilla are in a strange spot in that they won the Europa League, almost got relegated in a relegation scrap last season, we'll say. Won the Europa League, they're in the Champions League, lost their sporting director, who's a cult hero. He's actually probably, he's in too mainstream to be a cult hero, but Monchi is gone, having to navigate those waters. And they've only signed one player, a central midfielder from Eintracht Frankfurt for 10 million, Adria Pedrosa on a free transfer, and Loic Badé, who was already there, his deal was made permanent. And they've lost Brian Hill and Papa Gueye, who have returned from their loan spells. And we're just kind of discussing them yesterday, and we're not entirely sure what to make of Sevilla this season.
No, they're a team who, we'll see them later on tonight, who you just want to get a good look at in competitive terms again, because it's just a strange summer, and they're not that in that different a situation to many teams who have had struggles with registering players and sort of cutting their squad. Mendilibar and Victor Orta have both said that this squad is too big and players have to leave before other ones come in. So managing that just admin side of it is just, yeah, severe. Like others are just having problems with it. And in the meantime, I'd say the biggest question I have for Sevilla and Mendilibar is just surrounding the changing context of this season, the fact they've got a full campaign ahead of them, their Europa League champions, expectations are renewed, and they're going to be expected to be top six minimum this season. So that's a very different challenge for Mendilibar. He came in at the end of last season. I think we both thought that Sevilla had enough to stay up as soon as a guy like Mendilibar came in, and then it became, we're still alive in the Europa League. We've basically got a free hit to do something here. There's no pressure or expectation on us to win the Europa League, but if we did, it'd be an incredible story. And I think that feeling was what drove them to the final and then to win it as well. So the changing context is what most interests me now for Mendilibar and Sevilla. And like you said, Monchi is gone. It's a new era, so we're in a bit of a grey zone for the moment.
We spoke about them after they won the Europa League, and we said that it was the right decision to give Mendilibar the contract, and it felt like the momentum that they had gathered in the Europa League, and they had improved massively in the league, and Mendilibar was, to credit him, it was his stimulus that forced that change. And but yeah, you look at that team, that potential starting 11, Dimitrovic, because Bono's being linked with Real Madrid now, and that looks like that could go through. Jesus Navas, Badé, Gudelj and Acuna, and then Sow and Rakitic at the base of midfield, Ocampos, Oliver Torres, Lamela and En-Nesyri. Rakitic is getting older. Fernando getting older. He's not in that 11, but Jesus Navas can't go on forever. There just is a general feeling of staleness. Now, we do have one of our Opta colleagues coming onto the podcast next week to discuss Sevilla, because they're playing Manchester City in the European Super Cup, and we're going to talk with them in more detail then. So, but for now, we'll get a look at them when they play Valencia later on tonight. But for now, there's not a whole lot to say because of the fact that their summer transfer business has been a little bit slow, and And they, and neither have they lost anyone really significant that they need to replace. Brian Hill, definitely, yes, he played a massive role for Sevilla in the Europa League, but not impossible to replace him. Lamela will be there to step in. Let's just see. Again, as I say, we'll get a look at them now in the next couple of hours against Valencia, who we'll talk about now. And they have had, we don't actually have a producer for the show yet, but if we did, he would be playing some kind of a sad funeral music right now once we start talking about like the Undertaker music or something from wrestling, because Valencia's summer has been just so sad in that Peter Lim has reportedly blocked transfers. They've lost Samuel Lino, who went back to Atletico Madrid after loan. Yunus Musa, Cavani, Lato, Justin Kluivert, Nico Gonzalez, Ilaix Moriba, and they brought in Pepe Lu, and then they turned the Turkey centre back's loan deal permanent. And we're not really sure what the direction is here, if there is any, and how long Ruben Baraja is going to put up with this. He said recently that Peter Lim must know the necessities that we have. Now, whether or not he's going to act on those, we're not sure, but it's a rough one for Ruben Baraja to be in, and I just wonder what the feeling overall around that squad is at the moment.
Yeah, it's every sort of pre-season under Peter Lim, it seems to just get progressively worse, and it feels like the leash that is on the players and just the attitude around the club, it just gets shorter every pre-season. And this one is, yeah, they played Aston Villa in a pre-season home game recently. Again, chance against the board throughout. Gabriel Paulista got into an argument with a fan mid-game. And their bench was basically just a bunch of kids from the B team. A lot of them were in the starting 11 as well. And yeah, it just feels like it could flip at any moment and everything could just be set alight. So they've got players that we like. You know, Pepe Lu is a player both of us really like in midfield. Javi Guerra is a player I'm high on. But surrounding that, there's just no certainty whatsoever about this club at the moment.
Ruben Baraja came in last season. He managed for 17 games. They conceded 19, but their expected goals against was just 17.41. That's 1.02 expected goals per game against them. And that was good enough for fourth in the league for managers with at least 10 games managed last season. He was behind just Xavi, Alguacil, Ernesto Valverde's Athletic Bilbao, and then it was Valencia's Ruben Baraja. Now, back to the idea of what Mendilibar came in against, the whole context has changed again because they were fighting relegation. It was the means justified the ends for Ruben Baraja. Whereas this season, now maybe the fans understand and they will accept that they're not going to be going out playing expansive style. It's not a project that is exciting for anyone. But he will be he's going to have to come out against teams and at least be a little bit more attacking, and that might compromise them defensively. So it's going to be a team full of youngsters. Again, and I think the fans are a little bit forgiving given the fact that they do understand what's going on. So they're not going to get, and the fact that they're youngsters from the academy that are playing, they're not going to get on their backs as quickly as if they were a bunch of mercenaries brought in. So it'll be interesting to see the dynamic there and see what happens, see what Ruben Baraja tries to do, and whether or not we're going to see an early managerial change if things don't start well for them. We spoke yesterday about this and we were just wondering, are they genuine relegation contenders?
It's strange because they do have good players. Gaia, Mamardashvili, players that could play for top six teams. Pepe Lu is a player I think could play for a European level team. Andre Almeida as well. But in between that, yeah, they're basically just filling gaps now with existing senior players that they don't really like. Guys like Gabriel and Diakabi. You can't place too much faith in them. They're not overly liked by the fans. And then young players who are showing promise, but again, they're relying on them to an extent where it's just not ideal. And yeah, we said yesterday when we spoke that if we just accept the situation as it is, then the fact that there's so many young players in this team is going to shield them a bit from the heat that will come from the fans and just everything that surrounds the club. But still, it's not the optimal way to run a team. And these players are going to be under the fire and playing in difficult circumstances. I mean, I look at a guy like Fran Perez, he's done okay in preseason, but a few weeks back, they were negotiating a loan switch for him to Elche to play in the second division. And now it looks like he's going to be their right winger from day one and without any real competition for that place. So again, there's a lot on these young players. And if Baraka could do anything besides survive the season, then full credit to him.
And in that Aston Villa game, it did get, you were talking about the fight with the fan and the issue with, and but Paulista was lucky not to be sent off in the first half when he had a go at, I think it was Ollie, no, it was John McGinn and him had a row. But anyway, it was a really chippy affair, and you're talking about optimal ways to run a team. Moving on to the next team, the preseason has been far from optimal, and I watched them against Newcastle, and it was one of the chippiest preseason friendlies you will ever see. It went beyond chippy. It was downright, this is going to turn into a bloodbath here. And I think it was because of the way Newcastle were playing. Villarreal obviously want to play on the ball. They want to provoke you. They want to draw you in. But Newcastle were having none of that. And as soon as Villarreal got a little bit of a break on them, Newcastle were just chopping them down and taking them out of it. So it was that game against Newcastle, they lost heavily. But I actually didn't think Villarreal were that bad. I think they're going to be fine. I texted you after I watched it, and I was like, because we had both heard that, oh my God, Villarreal are just in free fall in preseason. They're in free fall. What's going on? And I said, I'm going to go and watch this Newcastle game. And I actually thought they were the better team in the first half. They were 1-0 down. Now, having said that, Newcastle did cause problems when they did manage to turn them over high up the field and hit them in transition. And Villarreal always susceptible to that under Setien. But in general, they created really good chances. Gerard Moreno put Alex Baena through for a goal. He should have scored it. And yeah, I think Villarreal are going to be absolutely fine. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the lack of hype, or don't believe that they're as bad as they have been in the preseason, because I think they're going to be fine, and they will be able to challenge against the best teams in the league, while also and always having that kind of susceptibility that comes as part of the package deal with Quique Setien.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I'm still going to be watching every single Setien match, because I just like the approach and what they do, and the fact they've got really good technical players. I think I'm just a little bit underwhelmed for the fact that I just don't see how they're going to be as good as they were the back end of last season, just for player losses alone. They've lost a lot of dynamism with Nicholas Jackson and Chukwueze going. And that's just going to pretty drastically alter what they can do in the final third, I think. Then they're going to have to sort of move back towards being a slower build-up team and accommodating guys like Gerard Moreno, who is a wonderful player, but he's not a winger. He plays at a slower tempo. They're going to have to probably manage the ball a lot better in central areas this season, just because they're not going to have that real game-breaking speed to open matches up. It's merely the transfer losses, which is my main point of feeling underwhelmed. I think the big winner for them this summer is their bank account, but I'm not sure it has helped Setien to really move the team on, although they will remain a lovely team to watch and a real asset to La Liga.
I obviously think that the departures are a massive blow. I mean, I don't know how any team can lose Nicholas Jackson, Samuel Chukwueze, Pau Torres, and even Giovanni Lo Celso on loan, who's gone back to his parent club. You can't lose that amount of players along so many lines of the field without suffering a downturn. But I think the one area where they're going to suffer probably most in how they want to build up and what they want to do is in goals. I think Pepe Reina he's just not what Quique Setién needs. And I'm so surprised that I haven't used some of the funds to go and buy a goalkeeper. And I just think that he maybe puts a cap on how good they can be and how dynamic they can be. And it's a kind of a strange one. But they've had a really, really busy transfer window too. They obviously got loads of money from the Nicholas Jackson, Chukwueze, and the Pau Torres sales. But they brought in Sorloth, Terraz, who just made permanent from Corona, Brereton Diaz from Blackburn, Santi Comesaña, who had an excellent season, a couple of seasons with Rayo, Denis Suarez, Matteo Gavia on loan, and Ilias Comach from Barcelona. And I just wonder, it feels like they're just trying to add quantity rather than like one singular player, which is fair enough, because you can't replace with their funds and with the way that La Liga is, they're not going to be able to replace Nicholas Jackson. They're just not going to be able to sign a lad who's going to come in and do what he did of his quality. So it's going to be difficult to replace those players, but at the same time, they've had a really busy summer, and I do think that the Comesaña, for example, signing, the Ilias Comach, for example, signing, could be a salve for what you said about their speed. That might help them a little bit in terms of how fast they play and how high they press and how they win the ball back and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's I agree with the sentiment of it's a little bit quantity over quality at the moment. I look at a guy like Denis Suarez and think, where is this guy actually going to play? Because they've just got so many midfielders. And yeah, we probably should mention the star signing, if you could call it that, which is Alexander Sorloth, who was at Real Sociedad last season. Surprising one. We all thought he was going to go back to Real Sociedad, and then out of nowhere, it just turned out that he was a Villarreal player. And I don't know about you, but I think the sentiment from most people is that Sorloth is like a target man, but I think he's much more of an off-ball runner than he is a target man. What do you reckon?
Yeah, and he, that's the way he kind of played against Newcastle. He was dropping deeper, and he was linking play, and he was trying to get in behind when Villarreal spread the play, and there was areas for him to run into. Definitely, yeah. I don't think he's like a traditional target man. He looks like one, and I guess just being from Scandinavia, he's big and he's a big guy. So like we generally have that idea that he's a big. Like a big target man, but I don't think he's that exactly. And I do think it is a kind of a. Another team that we're really interested to see here, because they've lost so many players. But this is actually something that I wanted to say as well about the losses. Villarreal are such a well-run club, and we're just two guys on a podcast talking, that they've done this time and time again. Replace players, sold players for a massive amount of money and replace them. It hasn't always hit right at the moment they sold a player, but they do eventually find the players. So Nicholas Jackson, so let's start with Pau Torres. His level had kind of dropped off a little bit, and I don't think he's irreplaceable. I know he's a big name and he was being linked with massive moves, and but his level definitely did drop off in the last maybe 6 months, around that. And I just think maybe Jorge Cuenca he could just slot in there. That's not a huge problem.
Yeah. I was just going to agree, actually, because I think with Cuenca, it's more a case of how long it will take to get him to that level, because I think by the time he reaches his final form, I think he will be a very, very able replacement for Pau Torres and possibly have a higher ceiling defensively. I don't think anybody really thinks Pau is a wonderful defender. It's what he does in build up that really sort of catches the eye. So yeah, I think it's just a case of how long will it take Cuenca to get there, and will Setien still be here by the time that happens?
Yeah, that's true. And then just to move on then to Nicholas Jackson, who was unbelievable last season when he played, but it's such a small sample size. Are we sure that he is who we think he is? And we were waxing lyrical about him. Don't get me wrong here. We were huge fans of Nicholas Jackson, and we thought he looked excellent. But it is such a small sample size. And Chelsea came with a bag load of money, and they're thinking, this guy's not irreplaceable, maybe. And the money alone would have probably convinced him anyway. But maybe they're thinking, no, we can find someone who can do a decent enough job that we don't have to say no to this. And then on Samu Chukwueze, who probably is the hardest one to replace, and they haven't replaced him at all. But having said that, Jeremy Pino is a player who I think could be ready to. So when they were playing together, they were kind of having to accommodate for the two on the left and the right, and two excellent options. And most managers would say, yeah, give me both. But at the same time, you do have to, there's only so much of the ball that you can, to go around. And I think that maybe Jeremy Pino is ready to accept more of the burden here now that Samu is gone. So they're thinking, okay, let's, that's fine. Now, again, it's really, I'm trying to put a positive spin on this here. I know there'll be three big, massive losses, but I don't know. At the same time, I do think that they have players that who can do a decent enough job for them, for the players that have left. And look, it mightn't click for Setien. It might take a while for Cuenca to come on. It might take a while for Pino, who can be kind of hot and cold at times. Sorlot might not settle in. Yeah, it's we'll have to wait and see, but they're probably European places, and anything above that is going to be a massive bonus, really. Like maybe sixth or seventh is their natural place in the pecking order, and anything above that then is just they're punching, and they're you know. So what is your prediction for them this season?
I think I'd be surprised if they finished below top six, but I'm not as convinced that they'll push for top four quite in the way that we'd like them to. I'd love to see it, because it would be so much credit in the bank for Setien. And I think some of my doubts about this season for them is just the fact that, not controversy, but it always feels like things can turn very quickly for Setien. I don't know if it's his style of football or the way he talks after defeats or things like that, but yeah, it always feels like there's a very short leash on him, and I wish it wasn't that way, because I'm a big fan. And yeah, I don't know if it's after the Barcelona thing, if people look at him as a bit of a joke figure, really, but I've never followed that thinking at all. And yeah, it's, I'm glad he's still here, and they kept him on because he was close to going at a certain point last year, which probably refers to what I was mentioning initially. So yeah, they should be an exciting team at the very least.
When he came in, they lost, or they had a poor run the first maybe three or four games, and I was like, oh, that's it, he's going to be sacked. And I was like, oh, okay, hold on here for a second, just relax, please. But yeah, I guess it's a fear of, oh my God, we're trying something new and everyone's looking at us. Like there's ways to lose, and people don't mind when you lose being trying to be solid. But when you try to, when you get notions and you think you're better than you potentially are, then the criticism is really, really strong. And I guess it doesn't really help the fact that Julen Lopetegui is now a free agent after leaving Wolves, and he just probably ideal for him. it give him maybe 3 or 4, 6 months off, and all of a sudden Villarreal got through a rough spot, and Julen Lopetegui will be, his name will be linked with this Villarreal job. And but yeah, so listen, it's been pretty speculative here on La Pausa podcast for the last couple of months, but stuff is about to get real. Jamie, we're recording here on Friday afternoon. I want you to log off, take the earphones out, go and have a lie down before the big games start tonight. I want you refreshed and ready for this season. We're going to be podding a lot more this season. We're going to have guests. We're going to have articles on the analysts. Our La Liga coverage is about to improve and increase massively over the next few months, and I hope you're excited.
Yeah, I feel a little bit like a cyclist at the Tour de France who sets off too fast at the bottom of a hill, because I've really taken on a lot of pre-season stuff, and now like the season has arrived, and I already feel like, geez, we've got many, many months of this to come. But yeah, at least we've got a bit more of a stimulus now to actually get stuck into real stuff and not just speculate for weeks and weeks.
Exactly. I was talking to Jamie over the last number of months and preseason. I was like, yeah, I haven't seen Rio. And Jamie was like, oh no, go to their YouTube channel and you'll find the game. It's really good quality. And I was like, Jamie, man, take a break, will you? But no, I hope our listeners anyway are excited that Jamie goes above and beyond for you to come in here every week with the best coverage he can possibly bring to the table. But anyway, we're going to leave it there. We're going to go. We're going to have a cup of coffee. I will lie down and get ready for Sevilla Valencia tonight and Almeria and Rayo Vallecano later on. And their Segunda division action. We're not going to be leaving Segunda out this season either. But we're going to leave it there for this episode of La Pausa Pod. And for our 2023-24 previews, all the previous episodes are up already. And yeah, I hope you enjoy the start of La Liga, and we'll see you next week.